This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In an effort to get the Middle East peace process moving, President Bush called leaders from both sides to the White House. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon visited yesterday, Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas last week. The decisions to implement the Middle East roadmap have delivered an uneasy respite from previous levels of violence. It's been relatively quiet over the past month or so. But both sides say the other needs to do much more to overcome the distrust, suspicion, and hatred that's built up after so many years. This week, we're speaking with thinkers from both sides to get a range of opinion on the peace process. On Monday, we heard from two Israelis, a left-wing novelist and a conservative settler. Today, Palestinian views. On both programs, we're also hearing from pollsters to help put these personal opinions in context. If you have questions about the role of the United States, give us a call. Or if you have relatives or friends in the Palestinian territories, call and let us know what you're hearing from them. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. But first, NPR's diplomatic correspondent Vicky O'Hara joins us here in Studio 3A to give us an overview on Prime Minister Sharon's meeting at the White House yesterday with President Bush. Vicky, thanks for being with us.
It's nice to be here.
President Bush called on both sides to take hard decisions to push the peace process forward. What's he asking for?
On the Palestinian side, what the president wants is a total halt to all acts of terrorism and all incitement against Israelis. As an example of the message that the president was delivering, in his meeting with Abbas last week, the president was talking about the issue of Israeli settlements, and he said that he made it clear that he's opposed to the settlement policy, but he said the big issues between Israel and the Palestinians can't be addressed until all violence stops, until, you know, terrorist groups basically are dismantled, or militant groups that are accused of terrorism. On the Israeli side, the president is looking for a halt to settlement expansion, the dismantling of illegal settlement outposts. But more than that, he kept talking about the need for Israel to do more to ease the lives of the Palestinian people. For instance, the president talked about the number of Israeli roadblocks and suggested that perhaps all of them weren't necessary.
Mm-hmm. Did he make any progress?
Nothing dramatic, but some incremental steps were taken. Prime Minister Sharon came to Washington just after his cabinet had approved the release of some 500 Palestinian prisoners. There are at least 6,000 such prisoners, so the Palestinians aren't too impressed, but it was something. Israel also agreed to dismantle some checkpoints, and Prime Minister Sharon said that he was prepared to do more. For instance, he said that the security barrier that Israel's constructing through parts of the West Bank, they would try to build in such a way as to minimize the negative impact on the Palestinians. On the Palestinian side, Prime Minister Abbas repeatedly affirmed his commitment to peace and nonviolence and said that the process of reform of Palestinian institutions would continue, but he would not promise to confront Palestinian militants. He says that to do so at this point would result in civil war.
What's been the reaction in the region to these two meetings at the White House?
By some accounts, Prime Minister Abbas went home last week quite happy about the very warm reception the president gave him at the White House. But the Palestinians clearly were not so happy after yesterday's meeting between Mr. Bush and Prime Minister Sharon. Saeb Erekat, the high-profile Palestinian lawmaker, told the Associated Press that he really had hoped that President Bush would stand next to Sharon and tell Sharon to stop building the security barrier, and Mr. Bush didn't do that. Hamas leader Abdelaziz Rantizi predictably says that the president's statements yesterday show that the visit of Abbas to Washington was a failure.
For this process to move forward, it's got to be reciprocal, and each side has to give up things that are important to them. How do you break the impasse?
The message from the White House is that it's time for both sides in this conflict to start confronting the extremists among their own people. For the Palestinians, that means the militant groups, Hamas and Islamic Jihad. And for Israel, it's the extreme right, which promotes the settlement policy and harsh measures against the Palestinians. In order for the peace process to move beyond phase one, both sides are simply going to have to get a grip on the opponents of peace within their own ranks. And Israel will not move ahead with the roadmap if its security is jeopardized. The Palestinians are not going to support a peace process that doesn't put an end to Israeli settlements. The administration's biggest concern at the moment seems to be strengthening the hand of Abbas so that he survives politically long enough to rebuild Palestinian security capability, putting him in a position to challenge the militants among his people.
It's not going to succeed at all unless momentum can be sustained. What's next in the process?
Well, the White House is going to have to decide how far it's prepared to go to maintain pressure and to increase pressure on both sides. The president certainly has become far more engaged than in the past. He finally has established a relationship with the Palestinian leadership, but he also is gearing up for an election campaign and doesn't want to alienate voters by leaning too heavily on Israel. In order to move the roadmap into phase two, the president is going to have to make some decisions, and he's going to have to make them before October, because that's when the current ceasefire by the Palestinians is scheduled to expire.
NPR's Vicky O'Hara, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Vicky was with us here in Studio 3A. And now we move to Palestinian views. As we noted earlier on Monday, we examined Israeli views on peace in the Middle East. You can listen to that program if you'd like on our website, www.npr.org. Just click on the Talk of the Nation link under NPR programming. Joining us now is our first guest, Ali Jerbawi. He's a professor of political science at Berzeit University in the West Bank. He's been skeptical of the peace process. He joins us now from his home in Ramallah, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
After 8 weeks of the roadmap, are you optimistic or pessimistic?
Well, I'm pessimistic. Let me first say that I find the roadmap as a text a good plan. My skepticism is about the implementation of it. Up to this point, I'm not sure if we have actually started the implementation process. Are we implementing the roadmap? Have we started the first step, stage of it, or are we still at a preparatory stage? No one knows actually if we have started or not. If we have started the roadmap, then the roadmap, the good thing about it is that the end result is known and the process should be reciprocal. Up to this point, if we have started, I want to see what the Israelis have been doing. The roadmap in its first stage asked the Israelis to stop all settlement activities, to go back to the situation of the 29th of September 2000, and to stop all aggression against the Palestinians. This haven't happened. You know, all what happened is that they removed the checkpoints and they're releasing some prisoners, and that's about it. So, have we started the implementation or not? Are we going to reach by 2005 the final result, the establishment of a Palestinian state, fully independent, fully sovereign, on the borders of 1967, or the wall that Israel is building right now, 12 meters high in concrete, that is ripping the West Bank in pieces and leaving it in cantons? Is this going to stop, or is it going to continue? Mr. Sharon told the world at large, in front of Mr. Bush, that the war is going to continue. I don't buy this business of, you know, we're going to minimize the results of the war and on the Palestinians. The war is taking the land and taking the water, and it's ripping the West Bank into pieces and cantons.
Do you think that the United States is applying enough pressure to both sides? Do you trust the United States as the honest broker in this process?
Well, I think that it's pressuring the Palestinians more than it's pressuring the Israelis, and this is a fact, and it's known why it has been doing this for many years. But I hope that now, by, you know, Mr. Bush is saying that he has someone that he can trust, Palestinian camp, this has to go more than words into deeds. Actually, if he has actually someone to trust and if he is happy about the progress that the Palestinians are making, then he has to start pressuring Israel into into taking steps. Not only we need words, we need deeds, actually. And up to this point, the American administration is not pressuring Israel the way that we would like it to happen.
One of the things that is a continually aggravating factor in all of this is the conditions under which many Palestinians are forced to live. Until those conditions are alleviated, is any real progress possible in your viewpoint?
No, of course not. You have to let the people on the ground living here in the West Bank and Gaza, they have to see the fruits of this peace process. Up to this minute, I don't think that many have seen it. The economic situation is extremely hard. 70% of the Palestinian people are living under $2 per day. We are living in total closure. All the towns, villages are cut off from each other. We have to climb mountains to reach from one place to another. It's extremely harsh. You have to convince the people that they have a stake in this peace process, if there is a peace process. Until the people would see a progress on the ground, I don't think that they're going to believe it. They have to see it to believe it.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And let's take a call from Michael in Miami.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask the gentleman, and this is something I haven't been to Israel in a long time, but I've been told that the school books, they have no mention of Israel, and that they teach the kids to hate the Jews. How can you have peace if you've got hatred?
This goes to, I think this is described, Mr. Jabari, in the roadmap as incitement.
Yes.
I'm inciting them.
No. I'm talking about the issue of putting the teaching kids hatred. That is
right.
Described as incitement.
Yes. Right. Also, the other thing is, which I've heard, and I wasn't there, that they're trying to destroy any Jewish artifacts at the Temple Mount so that they could prove that the temple was never there.
Well, why don't we deal with one of these at a time, okay, Michael? Mr. Jabari?
Yes?
On the issue of the school books and incitement.
Well, I don't think that the statement is correct. I would tell you that, things have to improve on both sides. But also, I refer the gentleman to the Israeli textbooks. I don't think that the Israeli textbooks are in it. There is any mention of Palestine. I don't think that they mentioned that the West Bank and Gaza are unoccupied territory. They call it Judea and Samaria. And why, if you want a peace process, you have to have it in a very even-handed way. You ask the Palestinians to do something. It's reciprocal. If it's not reciprocal, it's not going to work. You want the Palestinians to change something. You want the Israelis at the same time to change the same thing. Otherwise, the Palestinians are going to feel that they are being pressured, unduly pressured, and I don't think that this will lead us into a peaceful result and a peace in the area.
We just have a little over a minute left with you, sir, and I wanted to ask you, do you feel that there is on both sides a feeling that, a lot of people are scared that if this process is a failure, that the next round could be just devastating. Is there a feeling that people are ready to accept each other and live in peace?
Yes, I think yes. On the Palestinian side, I think yes. And I think that the Palestinians have been doing their share in this process. I think that Israel cannot have the cake and eat it too. At the same time, they cannot. Because they are more powerful in this process, they are occupying the Palestinians. They cannot come and say, okay, we want to take what we want and we will give you what we don't want and you have to accept what we don't want as a final solution to your problem. They cannot tell us that, take half of the West Bank, for instance, because we have settlements which are illegal to start with and we have to keep. We cannot leave Jerusalem because of this and this. We cannot give you water because this and this. And you have to accept at the end, the West Bank and Gaza are only 20% of total Palestine, Israel. And now they want us actually to share this 20%. So they might leave us with 10%.
Ali Jabari, I'm afraid we have to leave it there, but thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
He is a professor of political science at Beerzeit University. More after a break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the roadmap to peace in the light of the president's recent meetings with Israeli and Palestinian prime ministers here in Washington. Today, we're listening to Palestinian views. Monday, we examined Israeli views on peace in the Middle East. If you'd like, you can listen to that program on our website at www.npr.org. Just click on the Talk of the Nation link under NPR programming. For those of you who have friends or family in the Middle East, what are you hearing from them about the progress of the roadmap and the prospects for peace? You're invited to join the discussion. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Someone joining us now is Hiba Husseini. She's an attorney in Ramallah. She served as legal advisor to the Palestinian Authority at the Oslo Agreement negotiations in 1995 and joins us now from her home in Jerusalem. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
I've heard that you see some positive aspects in the roadmap. Is this something that you are more optimistic about than pessimistic?
Well, looking a little bit longer term, as opposed to what's happening today on the ground, as Dr. Jarbawi mentioned, the situation on the ground is still a little bit murky with roadblocks and the wall and the fence. But longer term, with President Bush's vision for two states, living side by side in peace and prosperity, I see some positive developments right there, because it's the first time that the Palestinian state has been articulated by the United States president.
So from what I'm hearing, you think that the American role is absolutely critical in all of this?
Absolutely, yes. Direct involvement and the more engaged the president and the secretary of state and their administration would be seen as a very positive sign by the Palestinian people. And more even-handed in terms of playing both sides, Israeli and Palestinian.
Do you think that there is enough trust on the Palestinian side at this point? Because the partner is not just the United States, the partner is the government of Israel as well.
Yeah, well, you know, we're having an Israeli Likud party being so far on the right, there is a lot of mistrust. But with more engagement from the United States, perhaps a better rapprochement between the two sides can develop, more trust, more confidence. And the latest, you know, meetings in Washington between the President Bush and Prime Minister Abbas and Prime Minister Sharon are small steps and some positive signs.
If this opportunity is not to be missed, what do you think both sides need to do? And if you want to talk in the longer term, that's fine.
Well, we need, you know, concrete steps on the ground. That's really critical. You know, the Palestinian side needs to organize its house, put things in order in terms of security apparatus and so forth. But more critically so, from a Palestinian perspective, it is so important that Israel honors its commitments and promises to peace, continues on the negotiation track in terms of land for peace, as opposed to sidetracking the issue in terms of land for peace to security for peace, looking forward to discussing, you know, issues of the settlements, halting the building of the settlements, land swaps, in terms of, you know, territorial exchange, looking again to negotiating for the borders of 67, discussing the issue of Jerusalem in concrete terms, that needs to happen, addressing, of course, the refugee problem.
One of the questions we were talking to Israelis earlier in the week, and one of the concerns that they both expressed was the feeling on many Israelis that if there is a negotiation, more or less along the Clinton plan, the Y River plan, more or less along the borders of 1967, that once that's concluded, that Palestinian demands will not then stop.
Oh, that's a false statement, I believe. It is not a proper argument, because the Palestinians made the turnaround 180 degrees in 1993 when we signed the Declaration of Principles. And those principles are very clear. The Palestinian side recognizes the state of Israel. The Israeli side recognizes the Palestinian right to self-determination, to statehood, you know, to a negotiated peace settlement, and so based on UN resolutions. So the UN resolutions are the basis for the Palestinian peace proposals. So that is a propaganda argument, in my opinion, put forth by the Israeli right to sidetrack the issues.
Let's go to a caller. Herb joins us on the line from Bridgeton, New Jersey.
Thank you for listening.
Sure.
I'm glad we're talking with a lawyer because a lawyer knows the importance of definitions of words. You cannot go into court and use any word you wish. You have to use the words that apply to the case, and you need the proper definitions. Now, I'd like some definitions. First of all, what is so-called Arab land?
Hiba Hussein, did you hear the question?
Yeah, I heard the question. Arab land, with respect to our perspective, it is the borders of 67.
Now, what makes it Arab land?
What makes it Arab land?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're getting into historical discussions, from what we have agreed to, we define that as Arab land. That's the green line, that's the 67 border.
We
can negotiate, we can define, we can go back and forth, but
right.
That's what it means.
In other words, you're talking about Arab land without actually defining it.
Well, I think she's talking about negotiating what that agreement would be.
Right, exactly. Until that agreement is reached, settlements are not illegal because they're not on Arab land until it's defined as such.
No, 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 that's not so. No, 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 that's a slippery slope, sir. The settlements are on Palestinian land or Arab land, the 67 border. Fine, there are certain parts of the border. The green line is clear. The 67 border is clear. In the negotiated settlements, we are talking about swaps of land, whereby certain parts of the settlement, perhaps in a negotiated, fair, equitable settlement to end the conflict, we would have a negotiated border with respect to settlements. But that does not mean that the settlements are not illegal. Under international law, in everybody's book, in every lawyer's definition, legal definition, the settlements are illegal because they are built on occupied territory. Remember, the Arab lands that we're talking about or the Palestinian territory are occupied territories.
Okay, now...
Herb, I think we want to move on, but
I want to point out the legal aspect that what she said is 67 borders is not. It is the ceasefire line of 1949... And the agreement for the ceasefire between all the Arab countries and Israel was that those are never to become permanent borders.
Herb, we could argue these positions all day long, and we did want to move on to some other questions. But we appreciate your phone call.
Thank you.
I did want to ask you, Ms. Hussein, on our program we did speak with an Israeli settler, Mr. Israel Harel,
mm-hmm.
Columnist for Haaretz. And he was talking about the settlements, and he said, how can you unroot 250,000 people that are spread out in more than 150 communities? Some of them already have a third generation. He described this would be an inhumanistic act.
I'm sorry, in terms of removing the settlements?
In terms of removing the settlements.
But by the same token, how can you remove generations and tens of generations of Palestinians from their homes, and this is what's happening today, from their land that they've cultivated for years and generations? The settlements, relatively speaking, are newly built. The Palestinians have been there for a long time. They've been born. So it's the same argument. How can you, this is why you negotiate.
And I wanted to get back to that broader question of the spirit and the enthusiasm, if there is any, for such an agreement and for the kinds of accommodations on both sides that are going to be very difficult to do at this juncture. Do you think that people are ready to make the hard decisions?
People have been ready since 1993. The Palestinians have been ready. They want to end occupation. This is far most the prevailing thinking among Palestinians. This is why we had euphoria in 1993. This is why the years that subsequent years were very productive years, and you saw the economy improving, the business environment being very conducive, and you had very, very good prosperous years. Although there were a lot of downturns or downsides. But people are ready. Yes, I feel people are ready. But right now, today, they're very frustrated. They're very mistrustful of the Likud government and the policies of the past few years.
In that atmosphere of distrust, are they going to be ready to make decisions that could be risky?
Well, this is where we need the intervention of the United States to engage both sides in sincere efforts and in true negotiated settlement to end the conflict. Yes, and they will do that.
I wanted to ask, perhaps end, I guess, with this email question we got from Kenny Stump in Newport News, Virginia. As I understand it, he writes, Israeli and Palestinian children do not attend school together. How do they ever expect to get along if they keep themselves separate? The current generation is hopeless as far as letting bygones be bygones. They must start with the children. Israeli children need to learn Arabic, and Palestinian children need to learn Hebrew, and they need to learn about each other by learning together. Is that something that you would agree?
I would agree, yes, you know, getting the children to engage in activities and learning experiences, yes, it starts at a very early age. And Jerusalem schools, in fact, the Arab-Palestinian schools in East Jerusalem teach Hebrew, for your information.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Hiba Husseini is an attorney in Ramallah. She served as a legal advisor to the Palestinian Authority at the Oslo Agreement negotiations in 1995, and she joined us from her home in Jerusalem. On Monday, we heard some of the results of a joint Israeli-Palestinian public opinion poll taken in June regarding views on the roadmap for peace. Khalil Shikaki is the director of the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research. He's been working on the Palestinian side of this ongoing research project. And Mr. Shikaki joins us now from his home in Ramallah. And welcome to Talk of the Nation. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
The latest poll you did was conducted in June. At the time, there was majority support for the roadmap in general on both sides. Do you think that's changed at all since the recent meetings in Washington?
No, I don't think so. I think we still have a majority in support. It's not an overwhelming majority, but it has been a stable majority for the past 6 months or so. And that tells us that that support is more or less stable, but the public on both sides is becoming tired of the violence and the lack of progress, and they want a way out.
When you say it's not overwhelming support, but majority, can you give us numbers?
Yes, on the Palestinian side, it's approximately 56%. On the Israeli side, it's also about 58-59%.
The belief on both sides is that the other does not really want to recognize the other's status as a state for its people. In other words, mutual recognition of Israel as the state of the Jewish people and Palestine as the state of the Palestinian people. Your survey, though, found, in fact, a majority does support mutual recognition.
Yes, indeed. This is one of those cases in which a great deal of misperception prevails on both sides with regard to this issue, as well as other issues, such as the willingness of each side to implement the commitments that they have agreed to implement in the roadmap. The societies on both sides seem to have lost confidence in each other after 3 years of violence. This is not surprising. The results of the surveys are showing us the impact of these years, but at the same time, they are showing us that the reality on the ground for both sides is a positive one. The Palestinians indeed do support the roadmap, do believe that their leadership will implement it, and do believe and do support mutual recognition of Israel as a state for the Jewish people and Palestine as a state for the Palestinian people. And that is the positive side of it. Of course, the cup half empty is the fact that the Palestinians just don't believe that the Israelis believe in similar attitudes.
We're speaking with Khalil Shikaki, who's the director of the Palestinian Policy Center, about public opinion surveys on the prospects for peace in the Middle East roadmap. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And as we continue, Mr. Shikaki, according to your poll, there is also majority support for a hudna, a ceasefire, and for ending the armed intifada, the uprising, on both sides. What can be done around this time to maintain that kind of feeling?
Well, we have to convince people that they indeed have found an alternative to violence. For most Palestinians, this means they have to restore their confidence in the ability of negotiators to achieve Palestinian vital needs. These vital needs mean ending the occupation. It means ending the siege, putting an end to the settlement construction that is taking away their land, putting an end to the construction of the separation wall that is taking away a great deal of the Palestinian land. So if negotiators are able to deliver on all these things, or on most of those things, then people will tend to lose that support for violence, because the violence would no longer be of value as long as negotiations are able to produce these needs. We've seen this before when the Oslo process started. People have had a great deal of confidence in it, but then when it failed to deliver, they turned to violence.
Can you tell us what your poll discovered regarding Palestinian support for the relatively new prime minister there, Mahmoud Abbas?
In the last survey, there was a drop in his popularity. In an earlier survey, when he was first appointed, he seemed to get the benefit of the doubt. Almost two-thirds of the Palestinians supported his appointment, and in fact, a majority believed that he will be able to deliver on some of the basic requirements, like reforming the political system, improving the economic conditions, moving the process of negotiations forward. However, 3 years after we've done that survey, which I'm now referring to the June survey, mm-hmm. we found that Abu Mazen, the prime minister, was unable to take off. The level of support for him dropped, and the confidence in his ability to bring about these achievements has also dropped. Which means that Abu Mazen simply was not seen to be successful in the eyes of the majority of the Palestinians in bringing about these needs that are considered vital, and therefore he lost some of their support.
We just have a minute left, but I did want to ask you, this poll is part of a series. What direction have attitudes been moving regarding the peace process?
And in general, we found there are some stable positions. Regardless of the violence, this has been one of the amazing findings. Regardless of the violence, both societies continue to believe strongly in the two-state solution. Both societies have exhibited a strong tendency to support reconciliation between the two people in the context of a peace deal that would create two states and that these two states would recognize each other.
Well, Khalil Shikaki, thanks very much. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there.
Thank you.
Khalil Shikaki, director of the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research. He's been working on a joint Israeli-Palestinian research project which measures attitudes and public opinion on the roadmap and the peace process in each community. He joined us from his home in Ramallah. Remember, if you'd like to go back and listen to the Israeli views on Monday's program, you can go to our website, npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. When we come back, part two in our updates from military hotspots around the world, Afghanistan. It's NPR News.